Hare Krishna. We welcome you to our Sunday festival. We are known as the Hare Krishna people, and this mission is known as the Hare Krishna movement. And tonight, I thought to discuss why we are the Hare Krishna people and why this is the Hare Krishna movement. The reason is explained very nicely in a verse and purport from Srimad Bhagavatam, which is considered the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic literature. So it is most authoritative book. And this verse and purport explain who should chant Hare Krishna, why they should chant Hare Krishna, and how they should chant Hare Krishna. So we will begin, and we'll see how far we get. There's always next Sunday. So please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 I'll just recite the Sanskrit. Etanna virdyamananam ichatam akuto. Well, how much, when do we actually have to end? I mean, I'm happy to do the whole procedure. Okay. Etanna
virdyamananam.
Ichatam akuto bhayam. Yoginam ripanir nitam. Harinam anukirtanam. Etanna virdyamananam. Ichatam akuto bhayam. Yoginam nripanir nitam. Harinam anukirtanam. Please repeat. Etat. It is. Nirvidyamananam. Of those who are completely free from all material desires. Ichatam, of those who are desirous of all sorts of material enjoyment. Akuta bhayam, free from all doubts and fear. Yoginam, of all who are self-satisfied. Nripa, O King, Nirnitam, decided truth. Hare, of the Lord, Sri Krishna.
Krishna.
Nama.
Nama.
Holy name.
Holy name.
Anu.
Anu.
After someone. Always.
Always.
Kirtanam.
Kirtanam.
Chanting.
Chanting.
Translation. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord, after the ways of the great authorities, is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. Please repeat. O King,
O King,
constant chanting,
of the holy name of the
Lord, after the ways of great authorities, is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the previous verse, the great necessity for attaining attachment to Mukunda has been accredited. Now, who is Mukunda? Raise your hand. Who is Mukunda? Yes? Sorry? Yes, Mukunda is a name for Krishna. And it means literally the giver of liberation, mukti. There are different types of persons who desire to attain success in different varieties of pursuits. Who here wants to attain success? Everyone wants to attain success, but they have different varieties of pursuits, as we will read. Generally, the persons are materialists who desire to enjoy the fullest extent of material gratification. That's what most people are. And I won't ask you to raise your hand. Next to them are the transcendentalists who have attained perfect knowledge about the nature of material enjoyment and thus are aloof from such an illusory way of life. More or less, they are satisfied in themselves by self-realization. Above them are the devotees of the Lord, who neither aspire to enjoy the material world nor desire to get out of it. They are after the satisfaction of the Lord, Sri Krishna. In other words, the devotees of the Lord do not want anything on their personal account. If the Lord desires, the devotees can accept all sorts of material facilities. And if the Lord does not desire this, the devotee can leave aside all sorts of facilities, even up to the limit of salvation. Nor are they self-satisfied, because they want the satisfaction of the Lord. So, now this describes who should chant the holy name to achieve success. And there are basically three categories. Those who are free from all material desires. It's a smaller section of the population. Those who are desirous of all sorts of material enjoyment. That is the larger section. And those who are in neither category. They don't want to enjoy the world and they don't want to renounce the world. But they want to serve the Lord. And they can use material objects in the service of the Lord. Or if the Lord doesn't desire, they can leave aside material facilities. Their pleasure comes in the pleasure of the Lord. And those are devotees. And anyone who becomes a devotee, a sincere devotee or pure devotee, will experience unlimited spiritual bliss. The defect with those who want to enjoy the material world is that the material world is a place of misery. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. So, whatever happiness we experience is limited and temporary. Everything is accompanied by its opposite in the material world because we are in the world of duality. It's like a coin. There's heads and tails. You can't have heads without tails. They go together. So we may want it to come up heads every time. We want it to go the way we want. But actually, the two come together. There's heads and tails. And in the long run, you're going to get whatever enjoyment is due to you and whatever misery is due to you as a result of your past activities or karma. And therefore, the Bhagavatam also recommends that one should not try to increase one's happiness or decrease one's distress because they are already destined to come to you according to your karma. There's a saying in India that even if you go to Calcutta, your forehead will go with you. Previously, Calcutta was the most opulent city in India. It was considered like the jewel in the crown of the British Empire. And so people would want to go to Calcutta thinking that, oh, if I go to Calcutta, I'll become rich. Like some people now, they think, oh, if I go to America, I'll make good money. So they would go to Calcutta, and this is the land of promise, you know, this is the land of fortune. So the saying was, even if you go to Calcutta, your forehead will go with you, because it is stated that your destiny is written on the lines of your forehead. Also, they have the idea it's on the palms of your hands. So the forehead is sort of the emblem of one's destiny. And it's very common amongst people from India that if they are lamenting over their bad luck, they go like this with their forehead, like, oh, I could have, but, oh, this is so unlucky, I didn't. Or couldn't. Because the forehead, that's their destiny, that's their luck. So, the Bhagavatam says that, well, let me ask you, how many of you want misery? How many of you come to the temple to pray for misery? This is your last chance. Raise your hand. Almost nobody. But misery comes. You don't want misery. You don't try for it. You don't pray for it. But it comes of its own accord. So the Bhagavatam says that just as misery comes of its own accord, according to your destiny, without any separate endeavor, similarly happiness will also come of its own accord, without your making any effort, according to your destiny. Today I got an email from an old friend of mine from Bombay. And when I knew him, he was like in his early 20s. And he was quite devotional and also artistic. He wanted to make movies, and actually we collaborated and made a feature film about Haridas Thakur. And, you know, his father had a sort of perfumery business, and his older brother was, you know, working with the father in the business. And this young man was pursuing a life of devotion and creativity. And then his brother died, and his father passed away, and his brother died. So he had to take up the business. And now he's become something like the secretary of the All India Association of Perfumers. And he said, it's a joke. You know, he doesn't know anything. He said, it's a joke. But it's like destiny. You know, he's like destined to be successful. But a few times he used the word joke. He said, it's like a joke. I just ended up in this by accident. And I have no inclination for it. So that's sort of the way it works. I had this one experience in Calcutta. I was meeting people to get advertisements for our souvenir for a big Pandal program that we had there. Pandal program is like a tent program, but huge, you know. We were getting like 30,000 people. Maybe 20,000 people during the week and 30,000 on the weekend. We had done one in Bombay, and it was very successful. So Srila Prabhupada sent Tamal Krishna Goswami and me to Calcutta to do a similar program. So when we got there, Tamal Krishna Goswami said, you make the money, and I'll spend it. So, okay. And so I was meeting people and getting their support. And there was one man, he was like the chairman of a huge company. And, you know, he had a large plush office and, you know. But he wasn't, didn't seem very smart, frankly. And I thought, how did he get in this position? I thought, maybe it must be his karma. Otherwise, he wasn't that smart. Didn't appear to be. And I mentioned it to Srila Prabhupada that this, it must be karma. So, the idea is that just as misery comes of its own accord, without your endeavoring for it, happiness will also come. So we shouldn't spend our time and energy trying to increase our happiness, because we can't. We'll get what we're destined. Or decrease our misery, because we can't do that either. But we should use our time and energy to develop God consciousness, Krishna consciousness. Now, when one surrenders to Krishna, then, in a way, he's freed from his destiny. Because Krishna is above destiny. He's above karma. So in that sense, you can be free from your destiny, but not by trying to artificially, you know, increase your material happiness or decrease your material misery, but by surrendering, by chanting the holy names. And then everything is wiped off. Once an astrologer came to our camp when we were with Srila Prabhupada in Indore, and like he wanted to read the palms of all the devotees, so Prabhupada said, okay, let him, you know. But, and then he gave different predictions for different devotees. And then afterwards, the devotees asked Prabhupada, what about all these predictions? And Prabhupada said, you know, just by clapping your hands and dancing in kirtan, all the lines get wiped off. So devotees there beyond that, in a way. So, now, so who should chant? So we have these three categories, and everyone is in, we're all in one of those categories. But sometimes it's not that we're purely in one. We could be in a combination, sort of mixed. Like we want to be devotees, but at the same time we want to enjoy the world. Or we want to be devotees, and at the same time we want to get out of the world. But pure devotees, they don't want to, you know, stay in the world to enjoy it or get out of the world to escape it. They just want to serve Krishna however Krishna wants. But whatever your field of pursuit is, the doubtless and fearless method to attain success is the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. So who should chant? Logically, everyone. Everyone, you know, is either free from material desires or desirous of all kinds of material enjoyment, or wants to please Krishna, God. So who should chant? Everyone. And why? Because they'll be successful in whatever their pursuit is. And this is also a stated fact that on their own, karma in the sense of work for material elevation cannot be successful without some element of bhakti or devotion to God. And similarly, jnana, which desires impersonal liberation, that also cannot be successful without some element of bhakti. So every process is so weak on its own that one cannot be successful without some element of bhakti. And of all the practices of bhakti, as stated here, the chanting of the holy names of the Lord is the most highly recommended and most highly effective. So then, how? So this is established that we should chant the holy name. Everyone should chant the holy name for success, but how? And the answer is anukirtanam. Harinam anukirtanam. Anu means to follow, and like there are many words with it, like Ramanuja. Who, of course, there's Ramanujacharya, but who is Ramanuja? Huh? Yes, that's Ramanujacharya. Yes, Ramanuja is Lakshman, the younger brother of Ram. And they consider Ramanujacharya to be an incarnation. So he followed Ram, Ramanuja, Lakshman, he followed Ram. So Anu means to follow. We're followers of Rupa Goswami, Rupa Anugas. We're followers of Rupa Goswami. And Anu also means continuously. So how should we chant? We should chant continuously, following the ways of the great authorities. And what does it mean to follow the ways of the great authorities? Here Srila Prabhupada quotes Srila Jiva Goswami. In fact, day after tomorrow is the appearance day of Srila Jiva Goswami, who was very important spiritual teacher in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Srila Jiva Goswami, in discussing how to chant the holy name, has quoted the Padma Purana that there are 10 offenses to be avoided while chanting the holy name. And it's important for us to know these 10 offenses and to make a conscious effort to avoid them. In the beginning, we may not be aware of the 10 offenses, and we may chant and get a lot of benefit. But eventually we will have to come to the stage where we're aware of the offenses and make a conscious effort to avoid them. Then we come to the liberated stage of chanting. And when one is in the liberated stage of chanting, then one really relishes. And then beyond the liberated stage of chanting is the stage where one has pure love for God, for Krishna. And at that stage, one swims in an ocean, a fathomless ocean of divine ecstasy. But pretty much everyone starts from the offensive stage, and by practice and by good association, they come to the what Prabhupada calls the liberated stage, and then they really relish. And then chanting in the liberated stage, one comes to the stage of pure love for Krishna. So this is a detailed discussion. It's a science, spiritual science. But I think we should continue next week, because there are some in the audience who, I wouldn't say they're not desirous of prasadam, but they probably are, but they're willing to wait. And then there are those who have already left, whose desire for prasad was so great that they already left. But we don't want to we want to keep a healthy balance here. So I think we can end now. We can maybe have a few minutes for questions and answers, and then we can continue. So are there any questions or comments? Yes.
I know it can take a while, but could you maybe elaborate on those 10 quickly, maybe, please?
Well, I couldn't really speak about all 10 quickly, but I can mention two that are most, I would say, important. One is called pramadaha. Pramadaha means inattention. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a great teacher in the line, says that if one chants attentively, in other words, one pronounces each holy name carefully and hears attentively, then all the other offenses will be destroyed. And if one chants inattentively, which means offensively, then the other offenses can flourish. So that's one very important one to avoid. And the other is it's the first offense, sadhu ninda. The Padma Purana says something like satam ninda paramam. It's like it's the greatest offense or the worst offense. And that is to criticize devotees, blaspheme devotees who have dedicated their lives to the propagation of the holy name of the Lord. So if we were to focus on any, we should, of course, avoid all of them, but if we wanted to focus on two, those would be the two. Now, chanting attentively is more within our, apparently more within our immediate circle of influence, because there's just you and the holy name and your mind. It's a very limited playing field, if you will. So you're chanting, that's there's the sound of the holy name, and then there's your mind, which has the tendency to go hither and thither. And in the beginning, it can be so unruly, so rebellious, it just will not cooperate. So it can be a battle. But that battle, one day, must be fought. Otherwise, you remain on the offensive stage and you don't make much progress. You can make a little, but not much. And then the other sadhu ninda, criticizing devotees. My godbrother, Burijan Das, he sometimes gives seminars on the holy name. And so in one of the seminars, he gave the homework assignment to work on these two offenses, inattention and criticism. So the next day, he asked for a report. You know, and so one of the devotees, you know, said, well, because everyone resolved they were going to chant attentively and avoid criticizing devotees, especially devotees. So Bhurijan Prabhu asked, you know, how did you do on your homework? So one of the students said that, you know, she had resolved to not criticize, but the atmosphere was such that she couldn't help it. So Bhurijan Prabhu said, well, you have two choices here. One is change the atmosphere, and two is that you know what's right and wrong, and you just do what's right and you don't do what's wrong. And if you want to change the atmosphere, good luck. Because the atmosphere doesn't want to change. So, you know, better, you just know what's right and you do it. And let the atmosphere go on. Because the atmosphere wants to criticize. And you know, the atmosphere doesn't want to do what you want it to do. So you just do what you know you should do. So that those would be like the two probably most essential for practicing devotees or aspiring devotees. Yes.
Maharaj, you were saying about astrology. So as practicing devotees, my question is two parts. Like how much devotees should give weightage to the astrological thing, and just as beginners in Krishna consciousness, the second question is, do the beginners in Krishna consciousness also experience Krishna's hand in, like, as you said, by clapping, Prabhupada said that the lines of thing, destiny changes. So is it for the pure devotees or is it for the beginners too?
In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarva dharman prityaja mamekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha isyami masucha. That from the moment you surrender to Krishna, he takes charge of your sinful reactions. You may be new in that sense, you may be a beginner, but once you surrender to Krishna, Krishna takes charge. And Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna uses the devotee's karma in the best interest of the devotee. In other words, in a way you're free from karma because you're under Krishna's personal care, but there is something there that it's like he takes it away from you, but he can also administer it to you according to his discretion in a way that's best for you. You know, as far as astrology, I didn't exactly speak about astrology. I was speaking more about destiny and surrender. So I think we'll stick to that. I mean, I should mention that there is one devotee, very intelligent lady. In India, she wrote a book, How to Ruin Your Life with Astrology. So...
Yeah. So, okay. Any other questions or comments?
There is a lot of discussion in Bhagavad Gita about Atma and soul. What exactly is soul? Where does it reside, in the heart or the mind? And when does it enter the body and when does it leave the body?
That's a very good question, very basic question. That the first instruction of the Bhagavad Gita is that we're not the body, but we're the Atma within the body, the Jiva, Jivatma. Within the body. And later in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that he has two categories of energy: the material inferior energy and the spiritual superior energy. And the material energy is, you know, solids, liquids, gases, you know, earth, water, fire, air. And then there are subtle material elements: mind, intelligence, and false ego. But apart from these gross and subtle material elements, there's the spiritual energy, which is the living entity, and which is us. That's our actual identity. The gross body and subtle body they're like coverings of the soul, just like we have this dress. You know, we may have our underdress and our outer dress, but they're not us. So the body also is like that, gross body and subtle body. They're not us, they're just coverings. And we are the soul. So, you know, he asks, when does the soul enter the body? Well, it's more it's sort of the other way. That the body is built up around the soul. At the time of conception, the male, you know, impregnates the female with semen, sperm. And within that is the soul. And then when the soul, through that medium, enters the egg of the mother, that conception takes place. And because of the presence of the soul, the body develops. I mean, not every attempt at conception leads to a child, because the soul, it has to be there in order for the, and there are other conditions that are also required, but the soul has to be there for the body to develop. And death is the same thing. Death means that the soul leaves the body. The body is able to function. The body is like a machine. So a machine can't function without an operator. So as long as the soul is in the body, it works. We say the body is alive, but the body is never actually alive. The body is just a machine. And what's alive is the soul within the body. And as long as the soul is in the body, it works. And as soon as the soul leaves the body, it doesn't work. And we say it's dead. So this is really such an important point, that if we could just understand this one point, that we're not the body, but we're the soul within the body, that would create a whole revolution in our lives, our personal lives. And if society in general could understand it, it would create a revolution in the whole consciousness of the world. So that was an excellent question. Any other questions or comments?
Hare Krishna. I heard an example of, you were talking about mixed devotees, one with many desires, and the pure devotee has just fixed on Krishna. So it's like a child who says to his mom, I want to go to bed. I want to watch a video. I want to play a game. I want to go outside. If he speaks like this, the mother doesn't know, okay, what do I give this child? But if he says, I want to go outside. 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 And the mother, okay, this is what he wants. So with Krishna, we're, I want you, but I want this. I want that. Mixed, we're all over the place. Krishna's like, what to do with this guy? Sometimes he's saying he wants me, and sometimes he...
Very good example. And the mind is like a child. An obstreperous child. And it's demanding all sorts of things all the time. So we have to control the mind with the intelligence. You know, there's the gross senses, and then higher than the senses is the mind. Higher than the mind is the intelligence, and higher than the intelligence is the soul. So when we chant, we have to control the mind with the intelligence. The Bhagavad Gita says, whenever the mind wanders, we have to bring it back. So that's part of our sadhana, that's part of our practice, yoga practice, bhakti yoga. And but eventually the mind will surrender. You know, as you practice, you'll develop more taste. And then when you actually relish the chanting, then, because the mind wants to enjoy, ultimately the mind wants to enjoy. So when you come to that stage where it can actually relish the chanting, then the mind will cooperate. In the different stages of the development of bhakti, Rupa Goswami has mentioned nine stages. And another teacher, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, has elaborated on them. So it's like he says that in the lower stages, like you're chanting and your mind wanders. You don't even know in the beginning, you don't even know when it began to wander. You can't even figure it out. But then you bring it back. But in a more advanced stage, your mind may wander momentarily, but it will automatically come back. You don't even know how it came back. It just came back. So it's like different stages. But, I mean, you know, no one should feel discouraged because they're not on the highest stage in the beginning. I mean, by chanting and by good association, gradually improve and you will progress and you will experience these wonderful, the wonderful mercy of the Holy Name, which is Krishna himself. Yes, sir.
At what point of Guru Maharaj, at what point of time one experiences that his spiritual body or experiences that it is growing?
Yes. So in the different stages of advancement, Ado Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha. Ado Shraddha means like a preliminary faith and attraction. Like many of you, or maybe all of you, have at least some preliminary faith and attraction. So that's Shraddha, Ado Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha. The next comes regularly associating with devotees. Even to come to the stage of Shraddha, there must be some association with devotees. But the next stage, Sadhu Sangha, means that you regularly associate with devotees. You systematically associate with devotees. And then, so Ado Shraddha, Tata Sadhu Sangha, Tata Bhajana Kriya. And Bhajana Kriya means that you actually start to take up the practice of bhakti yoga.
And then if you do it properly, you come to the stage of anartha nivritti. Anartha means unwanted habits, unwanted desires. So if you chant attentively, make the effort to chant attentively, then anartha nivritti, all those unwanted things will be eradicated. So then you come to the stage of nishta. Nishta means steadiness. We're not steady because of these anarthas. And that's why, you know, one minute we want to go to the temple and chant, the next minute we want to, whatever, watch something or do something. So that's a very significant point, to cross over anarthas, anartha nivritti, and come to nishta. Then after nishta comes ruchi, taste. And even in taste, there's two divisions. In the first division, one has taste if, say, kirtan. If the kirtan is done in a very melodious way, one has taste. But if it's not done in such a melodious way, one doesn't have taste. That's sort of like the lower stage of ruchi. Higher stage of ruchi, it doesn't matter if it's musically palatable or not. One has taste for the holy name. And one doesn't care so much about the music that surrounds it or accompanies it. But one has taste just for the holy name. And then a shakti, that means attachment. And it's like then you're like really attached to Krishna. I mean, in ruchi you have taste for talks about Krishna, for chanting, kirtan, japa. And a shakti, you're like attached to Krishna, that you want Krishna, you want to serve Krishna. Anyway. And then the next stage, so all of these stages, seven stages, constitute sadhana bhakti. And then comes bhava bhakti. And at the stage of bhava bhakti, Krishna reveals himself. That's when you actually start to, Krishna reveals himself. And along with him revealing himself, he reveals your relationship with him, your eternal relationship with him. So, and then that's like the beginning stage of love, bhava, and then the more mature stage of love is called prema. And at that stage, your spiritual body, because we're talking about the atma, the soul, but that soul ultimately has a form, and it has an eternal relationship with Krishna. And so when you come to that stage, bhava, you get glimpses of it, and prema, you get, more full realization. And Srila Prabhupada said it's like when you're sleeping, you're dreaming, you're this, you're doing that, and you dream so many things which are not you. But when you wake up, you immediately remember, oh, I'm so and so, I have to get up, I have to bathe, I have to dress, I have to go to school, or I have to go to work, or I have to cook for my family. Immediately when you wake up, you remember everything about your identity. Not just who you are, but who your relations are and what your activities are. So coming to these stages after sadhana, that's called sadhya, bhava bhakti and prema bhakti, you remember who you are.
your actual identity and what your relationship with Krishna is, what your particular service to Krishna is, and which other servants of Krishna are associated with you in your service to Krishna. Everything is revealed. And at that stage, you have no identification with the physical body. You totally identify with your spiritual form. And at that stage, death, it doesn't even exist. It's just like that we discussed, the body's like a dress. So, you know, some people, like if they're really absorbed in something, they get undressed, they're not even really conscious of it. You know, they're, so it's like that. They've realized their spiritual identity and their eternal relationship with Krishna, and that, and leaving the body, it's like the dress is coming off and it has no real significance. So, does that answer your question? Yeah. So it's an exciting journey. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Well, this is definitely the advanced class here. Very, very nice. Good questions, good attention. And it's also important to read the books. I mean, whatever I'm saying is coming from the books. Of course, it's, you know, as we have realization, then what we say has more effect. Like, you know, Srila Prabhupada gives the example, if you're smoking and you tell someone, don't smoke, it's bad for you, it won't have that much effect. I mean, it could, you know. If one is honest and say, you know, I'm weak, I haven't been able to give it up myself, but I know it's bad for me and it's bad for you. So, yeah. I mean, each verse, like there's one verse in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam called the Atma Rama verse. Atma Ramas Chamunayo begins. And Atma Rama means one who takes pleasure in the Atma, in the self. And it came here that there are people who are satisfied within themselves. But they're not devotees, they're just satisfied within themselves. So this verse, the Atma Rama verse, says that even people who are Atma Ramas, who are self-satisfied, take pleasure in Krishna consciousness. So, one example is Shukadev Goswami, who spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. So he was a liberated soul within the womb of his mother. And he didn't want to come out, because he thought, why should I come out? If I come out, I'll just get entangled in Maya, in the illusory attractions of the material energy. So he didn't want to come out. So then, you know, Krishna sort of assured him that he could come out and Krishna would personally make sure that he didn't become entangled in Maya. So he came out. But he had no interest in home. You know, he just immediately left home. So his father wanted to get him back. But there was nothing material that could get him back.
So his father recited two verses from Srimad Bhagavatam. One that described the mercy of Krishna, beautiful verse, and another that described the physical beauty of Krishna. And when Sukadeva Goswami heard these verses, he became attracted. In other words, he had no material attraction, but Krishna is attractive even to liberated souls, even to Atmaramas. So this verse, Atmarama verse, Lord Chaitanya explained it so many different ways to Sarvabhauma, but say 18 ways, whatever. So then later, another devotee, Sanatan Goswami, said to Lord Chaitanya that, you know, I heard that you explained this verse in so many different ways. Can you also explain it to me? And Lord Chaitanya explained it in 61 different ways. And each explanation was true and distinct from each of the other explanations. And at the end, Sanatana Goswami was astonished that, how could you speak like 61 different explanations? And each one was true. And Lord Chaitanya described that, my dear Sanatan, please consider the nature of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna himself. And just as Krishna is unlimited, Srimad Bhagavatam is unlimited. And he said, every verse in Srimad Bhagavatam has unlimited meanings. And then he said, every word in Srimad Bhagavatam has unlimited meanings. And then he said, every syllable in Srimad Bhagavatam has unlimited meanings. And then he said, actually, I'm not speaking, you know, because you're so sincere and eager to hear. So this knowledge is passing through me to you. And he gave the example. The first, you could say, we call him the original commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam, Sridhar Swami. And he lived quite some time ago. But when his commentary first came out, it was so novel and revolutionary. And he really got into the inner essence of Srimad Bhagavatam and rasa, the relationships with Krishna of different devotees. So people were sort of, they didn't know what to make of it, whether it was authentic or not. So this is in Varanasi. So there's a temple of Lord Shiva called Vishwanath. So they thought, all right, we'll place the commentary at the feet of Vishwanath. And we'll see if we get any answer. And after some time, the answer came. Aham veti, shuka veti, vyasa veti, naveti va. And the meaning is, aham, I know the true purport of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Lord Shiva speaking. And aham veti, shuka veti, Shukadeva Goswami, who spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, he knows the real purport of Srimad Bhagavatam. And vyasa veti, naveti va. And Vyas, who wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, may or may not know the real meaning. So Lord Chaitanya quoted this to make the point that he this Srimad Bhagavatam that we have is written by Vedavyas. It's perfect in every respect. But he may or may not know the purport of everything that he wrote. But it passed through him to us. That's the idea. So Lord Chaitanya was saying, yes, I've spoken 61 meanings, but I don't necessarily possess them. Of course, he was being humble. I mean, he is Krishna, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. But he was making that point that because you are so sincere and eager to hear, so all these meanings came through me to you. So we are so fortunate to be in this line from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I mean, things are so easily available to us that were not available. I mean, before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, they just were not available, this rich understanding. And then before Srila Prabhupada's time, they were not available outside of India. And even people from India often end up appreciating Krishna consciousness more when they come to America, say, than when they were in India. So this is, you know, it's the mercy of Srila Prabhupada that this knowledge, this practice, this association is available to us. Easily available. And we should take it. I mean, there's an interesting conversation at a devotee's house in England, in London. His son, basically he was just saying that he, the father, went through a torturous journey to try to find a bona fide guru. Because there are like so many out there, I mean so-called gurus. And it was really an agonizing process to find a real guru, which he found when he came to ISKCON. Well, Srila Prabhupada. And he was saying that many of the children in ISKCON, like, they grow up with that association all around them. They may take it for granted. But, you know, he doesn't take it for granted because he knows what he went through to come to that place where he could get real knowledge coming in parampara. So, it's the new year, so we should really make this the best ever by, you know, immersing ourselves fully as possible in Krishna consciousness. All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Harinam Prabhu ki jai. Hare Krishna.